the hits. I'm Nikki Strong. Thanks for rolling with me.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. Coming up, Andrew Smith presents Ask a Teacher. We also have words and their stories from Anna Mateo. And we close the show with an American story. But first, the sound of church bells around the world is usually made by machine. But before newspapers, radio, telephones, television, and the internet, bell ringing by hand communicated important information within small communities across Europe. Now, a small school of bell ringers in northeastern Spain wants to recover the art of hand or manual bell ringing. The school's founder and leader, Xavier Payas, says there is a whole language of bell ringing to rescue and return to use. The Val d'Anbas School of Bell Ringers effort comes 2 years after the international community recognized the import of manual bell ringing in Spain. The United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, added the practice to its Humanities Intangible Cultural Heritage List in 2022. Payas's students have learned how to ring out calls for village celebrations, warnings of bad weather or fire, religious services, and deaths. Payas says bells could still help mark the rituals that we need. The change to mechanical ringing devices over the past century has flattened the bells' songs and muted their messaging powers, the teacher said. If the bells are played with expertise, he added, the sound can signal a time for celebrating or mourning. The sound can even signal when to run to the aid of a neighbor in need. For centuries, the tolling of church bells was our most important communication method, said Payas. He spoke inside the belfry that also serves as classroom in the town of Juanetes. Machines cannot reproduce the richness of the sounds that we used to hear, so there has been a simplification and unification of bell ringing. The language has been lost little by little until now, when we are finally recognizing its worth. Manual church bell ringing has continued in Eastern Orthodox countries, but most Christian churches in Western Europe today use electronic bell ringing systems. The students at Val d'Anbas include women and men from diverse professional backgrounds. One student was in his 20s. Several students were retirees. All spent the past few months researching bell sequences, documenting their history, and learning to play them. Roser Sori jumped at the chance to reconnect with her childhood. She worked to recover and play the sequence that had sounded in her grandfather's village to announce his baptism. "The bells formed a part of my life," said Sori, who now works in artificial intelligence. Juan Carlos Osuna and two other students recently tolled for the death of a woman. That meant swinging the largest of the bells. It weighs 429 kilograms. "It's an emotional experience," Osuna said. "You feel your blood pumping. You feel the strength and how you are communicating with everyone in earshot." He added, "For me, it is an honor. It's a way to honor both humans and God." Javier Payas says he has a full class lined up for the fall and about 60 more people on an admission wait list. He believes that a recovery of bell ringing in a neighborhood or town's life could help strengthen local communities. The school leader said, "This is a means of communication that reaches everyone inside a local community and can help it come together at concrete moments."
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Mei Zhen in China about the usage of two words that sound the same. "Dear teacher, I have some question about the words whose and whose. I sometimes have confusion when I hear. I am not always sure what word I am hearing. Can you please share with me your advice?" Thank you for writing to us, Mei Zhen. I'm happy to answer this question. The easiest way to know which word you are hearing is to listen for the words that follow it. We contract, or join together, the two words "who is" to make the contraction "whose." Often, the next word you hear after "whose" is a verb, as in these examples.
Who's going to help us? Who's making all that noise? Who's using this computer?
Sometimes, you will hear a prepositional phrase or a noun phrase after the contraction "whose."
Who's in the office today? Who's the director of that film?
Last, we can contract the word "who" with the verb "has." So the sentence, "Who has already seen this film?" sounds like this.
Who's already seen this film?
Now let's look at the possessive "whose," spelled W-H-O-S-E. We use it to ask about who owns or has something. So, you should listen for a noun after the pronoun "whose." Or, you can listen for the adjectives "this," "that," "these," or "those." For example, if we see a book on a desk and we do not know who owns it, we can ask either of the following questions.
Whose book is this? Whose book is that?
You can hear the noun "book," and you can also hear the adjectives "this" and "that" at the end of the question. We use the word "this" if we are close to the book. If we are farther away from the book, we use the word "that." We use the adjectives "these" and "those" for plural things.
Whose shoes are these? Whose bags are those?
We can also place the contraction whose and the possessive whose at the beginning of a noun clause. The noun clause begins after the main verb of the sentence, as in these examples.
I want to know who's going to drive the bus. I want to know whose idea this was.
You can learn more about possessive whose, including its use in relative clauses, in this Everyday Grammar on the mysterious word whose. We hope today's lesson is helpful, Mei Zhen. For our readers and listeners, do you have a question about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Andrew Smith.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On today's show, we take you to the bank. Banks help us manage our money. When we make deposits, we put money in. When we make withdrawals, we take money out. Banks help us reach important life goals. We can borrow money from a bank to buy a house. A bank can loan us money to start a business. So we need to trust our banks. And that need for trust gives us some idiomatic expressions in American English that are connected to banks. The first is simply to bank on something. If you bank on something, you trust it will happen. In fact, you count on it happening. Sometimes we use this expression to mean our strategy depends on something to happen. Here are some examples.
When a city hosts the Olympics, they bank on drawing large crowds to see the games. To win the election, the politician is banking on voters finding out about his opponent's scandals.
We often use this expression in a set phrase, to bank on the fact that something will happen. For example, you can bank on the fact that a famous person caught doing something wrong will soon give a public apology. It is certain to happen. You can bank on the fact that if I see chocolate cake, I will eat it. It is a given. It will happen. If you are sure something will happen, it's like money in the bank. When we have money in the bank, we count on it to be there when we need it. Banks offer guarantees that they will protect our money. So if something is like money in the bank, it is a guarantee. It is a certainty. When we say you can take that to the bank, we mean something is a sure thing. It is true or certain to happen. We finish today's show with one more expression, which sounds like a funny situation. If you laugh all the way to the bank, you make a lot of money with very little effort. This expression can also mean that you are happy about making money from something that others think is unfair or even bad. In other situations, it means that you make money from something that others think is a waste of time. For example, when a woman started an organic homemade dog food business, her friends thought it was a silly idea. They even laughed at her idea. But it ended up being very successful and made her very rich. So now she is the one laughing, laughing all the way to the bank. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. If you want to learn English, the stories and programs at VOA Learning English can help you out. You can take that to the bank. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
Today we tell a traditional American story called A Tall Tale. A tall tale is a story about a person who is larger than life. The descriptions in the story are exaggerated, much greater than in real life. Pecos Bill was a larger-than-life hero of the American West. No one knows who first told stories about Pecos Bill. Cowboys may have invented the stories. Others say Edward O'Reilly invented the character in stories he wrote for The Century magazine in the early 1900s. The stories were collected in a book called The Saga of Pecos Bill, published in 1923. Another writer, James Cloyd Bowman, wrote an award-winning children's book called Pecos Bill, The Greatest Cowboy of All Time. The book won the Newbery Honor in 1938. Pecos Bill was not a historical person, but he does represent the spirit of early settlers in the American West. His unusual childhood and extraordinary actions tell about people who believed there were no limits to what they could do. Now, here is Barbara Klein with our story.
Pecos Bill had one of the strangest childhoods a boy ever had. It all started after his father decided that there was no longer enough room in East Texas for his family.
"Pack up, Ma," he cried. "Neighbors moving in 50 miles away. It's getting too crowded."
So they loaded up a wagon with all their things. Now some say they had 15 children, while others say 18. However many there were, the children were louder than thunder. And as they set off across the wild country of West Texas, their mother and father could hardly hear a thing. Now, as they came to the Pecos River, the wagon hit a big rock. The force threw Little Bill out of the wagon, and he landed on the sandy ground. Mother did not know Bill was gone until she gathered the children for the midday meal. Mother set off with some of the children to look for Bill, but they could find no sign of him. Well, some people say Bill was just a baby when his family lost him. Others say he was 4 years old. But all agree that a group of animals called coyotes found Bill and raised him. Bill did all the things those animals did, like chase lizards and howl at the moon. He became as good a coyote as any. Now, Bill spent 17 years living like a coyote until one day a cowboy rode by on his horse. Some say the cowboy was one of Bill's brothers. Whoever he was, he took one look at Bill and asked, "What are you?"
Bill was not used to human language. At first, he could not say anything. The cowboy repeated his question. This time, Bill said, "Varmint." That is a word used for any kind of wild animal. "No, you aren't," said the cowboy. "Yes, I am," said Bill. "I have fleas." "Lots of people have fleas," said the cowboy. "You don't have a tail." "Yes, I do," said Bill. "Show it to me then," the cowboy said. Bill looked at his backside and realized that he did not have a tail like the other coyotes. "Well, what am I then?" asked Bill. "You're a cowboy, so start acting like one," the cowboy cried out. Well, that was all Bill needed to hear. He said goodbye to his coyote friends and left to join the world of humans. Now, Pecos Bill was a good cowboy. Still, he hungered for adventure. One day, he heard about a rough group of men. There is some debate over what the group was called, but one storyteller calls it the Hell's Gate Gang. So Bill set out across the rough country to find this gang of men. Well, Bill's horse soon was injured, so Bill had to carry it for 100 miles. Then Bill met a rattlesnake 50 feet long. The snake made a hissing noise and was not about to let Bill pass. But after a tense minute, Bill beat the snake until it surrendered. He felt sorry for the varmint, though, and wrapped it around his arm. After Bill walked another 100 miles, he came across an angry mountain lion. There was a huge battle, but Bill took control of the big cat and put his saddle on it. He rode that mountain lion all the way to the camp of the Hell's Gate Gang. Now, when Bill saw the gang, he shouted out, "Who's the boss around here?" A huge cowboy, 9 feet tall, took one look at Bill and said in a shaky voice,
"I was the boss, but you are the boss from here on in."
With his gang, Pecos Bill was able to create the biggest ranch in the Southwest. Bill and his men had so many cattle that they needed all of New Mexico to hold them. Arizona was the pasture where the cattle ate grass. Pecos Bill invented the art of being a cowboy. He invented the skill of throwing a special rope called a lasso over a cow's head to catch wandering cattle. Some say he used a rattlesnake for a lasso. Others say he made a lasso so big that it circled the whole earth. Bill invented the method of using a hot branding iron to permanently put the mark of a ranch on a cow's skin. That helped stop people from stealing cattle. Some say he invented cowboy songs to help calm the cattle and make the cowboy's life easier. But he is also said to have invented tarantulas and scorpions as jokes. Cowboys have had trouble with those poisonous creatures ever since. Now, Pecos Bill could ride anything that ever was. So, as some tell the story, there came a storm bigger than any other. It all happened during the worst drought the West had ever seen. It was so dry that horses and cows started to dry up and blow away in the wind. So when Bill saw the windstorm, he got an idea. The huge tornado kicked across the land like a wild bronco. But Bill jumped on it without a thought. He rode that tornado across Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona, all the time squeezing the rain out of it to save the land from drought. When the storm was over, Bill fell off the tornado. He landed in California. He left a hole so deep that to this day it is known as Death Valley. Now, Bill had a horse named Widowmaker. He got that name because any man who rode that horse would be thrown off and killed, and his wife would become a widow. No one could ride that horse but Bill. And Widowmaker, in the end, caused the biggest problem for Pecos Bill. You see, one day, Bill saw a woman. Not just any woman, but a wild, red-haired woman riding a giant catfish down the Rio Grande River. Her name was Slewfoot Sue, and Bill fell in love with her at first sight. Well, Bill would not rest until he had asked for her hand in marriage, and Slewfoot Sue accepted. On their wedding day, Pecos Bill dressed in his best buckskin suit, and Sue wore a beautiful white dress with a huge steel spring bustle in the back. It was the kind of big dress that many women wore in those days, the bigger the better. Now, after the marriage ceremony, Slewfoot Sue got a really bad idea. She decided that she wanted to ride Widowmaker. Bill begged her not to try, but she had her mind made up. Well, the second she jumped on the horse's back, he began to kick and buck like nothing anyone had ever seen. He sent Sue flying so high that she sailed clear over the new moon. She fell back to earth, but the steel spring bustle just bounced her back up as high as before. Now, there are many different stories about what happened next. One story says Bill saw that Sue was in trouble. She would keep bouncing forever if nothing was done. So he took his rope out, though some say it was a huge rattlesnake, and lassoed Sue to catch her and bring her down to earth. Only she just bounced him back up with her. Somehow the two came to rest on the moon, and that's where they stayed. Some people say they raised a family up there. Their children were as loud and wild as Bill and Sue were in their younger days. People say the sound of thunder that sometimes carries over the dry land around the Pecos River is nothing more than Pecos Bill's family laughing up a storm.
Once there was a drought that spread all over Texas.
That's all the time we have for today's show, but join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Brian Lynn.